In the spirit of reconciliation, the Swapcast acknowledges the traditional custodians of country throughout Australia and their connections to land, sea and community. We pay our respect to the elders, past and present, and extend that respect to all Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander peoples today.
We're talking again
about body swapping.
Welcome to the Swapcast Podcast, the world's only podcast dedicated to body swap movies. I'm your host, Paul Mitzi, and with me we have...
Brendan Levi.
And fresh from a bout of COVID...
Broderick Cordes.
In today's episode, we'll be breaking down the 2017 Italian romantic comedy, Wife and Husband, aka Husband and Wife, aka Moglie e Marito, where a couple on the brink of divorce swap bodies thanks to a science experiment gone wrong. But before we get into that, just a reminder that we absolutely love hearing from our listeners and we welcome film suggestions for future episodes. So please reach out to us on Twitter or Instagram. Send us an email at theswapcastpodcast@gmail.com. And if you want to support our show, reviewing us is the best way possible. So to say thank you, if we reach 100 star ratings on iTunes and Spotify, we will finally fulfill our fans' most common request to review
Face Off.
On to Wife and Husband. We have covered a few body swaps on the show that have taken place between a couple, most notably Dating the Enemy, Swap Me Baby, and Family Swap. So my question is, did this add anything new or profound to that concept? And to Brod, as someone who wasn't part of any of those episodes, did this film and its concept feel fresh or interesting to you?
I don't know if fresh or interesting is the right thing for it. I think if my thoughts on this movie are that it had an objective and it did it pretty well. It sort of did it competently. It's one of those movies that is neither so interesting or good that it's like great and you want to like shout praises, nor is it so awful or terrible that's like you've got heaps to say about it. I think my biggest worry about talking about this film is that it's just kind of so like in the middle that there's not a heap to say. It makes it unremarkable almost in how like fine it is my general feeling. It's absolutely competent. I think like performances are good. I think the general idea is fine. Like, nothing about it stands out as being particularly inspired or new or fresh, even as someone who doesn't review, you know, these sorts of films as on a podcast all the time. But it's not bad. It's just not remarkable. And that's like when we've watched films like Mama Boy, which is horrible, but also remarkable because of that. I don't know how to place it, if that makes sense.
Yeah, you're not wrong. This movie is very much a competent swap film. Like it hits the notes, does everything that a swap film is supposed to do. There is one aspect that is unique and almost makes me want to say this isn't a swap film, but I feel like we'll get to that.
I like it's like when it comes to how these things happen, the magical things that occur. I kind of liked that it tried to ground itself a little bit in its idea. I actually appreciate that. I agree. It almost isn't a sort of film,
I was surprised going into this film. I didn't expect it to put that much effort into the actual mechanics of the swap. And films that we've watched that have been much loftier in their goals have put a lot less effort into the swap mechanics than this one did.
I think part of the reason is, though, is because its actual message or its themes are related to explaining the swap directly and what occurred. It actually sort of ties into the theme of the entire movie,
And while those aren't like outstanding or new or saying something that made me go, wow, like that's such an insight to the human condition, at least it was, it followed a logic and the themes intertwined and like, So once again, like it's hard to say that it's something remarkable, other than the fact that out of all these shit movies we watch, it is at least able to follow how to make a movie.
I have to agree. Like it was very competent. It didn't do anything outrageously wrong, but I also, you know, wasn't overly emotionally invested in it, or you know, I didn't really laugh that or at all, really. And
it says it's a comedy on the genre ratings. I don't think it's much of a comedy.
It does feel very dramatic, like throughout. It's not like a full of like broad like gags and stuff like that.
No.
Yeah, and I think this is definitely a film that suffers if you've watched all these movies. Like,
yeah,
it's watching like there is nothing in this film really in terms of sequences, in terms of ideas that we haven't seen in other SWAT films. Like, we've seen every joke in this film.
Even in the small batch I've watched with you guys, like Boy Meets Girl, which is one of the worst things you've made me watch ever, which is saying something, by the way.
Yeah.
The thing about like her being a reporter in that and her being a TV anchor in this one is like it's almost the same thing. And like much of the blokey walking in heels thing, which I know obviously happens a lot in other SWAT films, but like if I've seen it a million times, guys, you guys have seen it a trillion times. Like it's
seen it. I remember thinking back to early days of this show where we were like, oh, you know, it's really interesting how they show like what would it be like if you had experienced a period for the first time, blah, blah, blah. And now it's like, how many times have we seen someone get a period in the wrong body? Like,
actually, the question I had was, how many times have you guys seen the period thing? I'm surprised to hear it's as many as it is. And two, the breastfeeding thing, because there's a bit where that both of those little moments felt fresh to me as someone who hasn't watched many SWAT films.
Yeah, I think the
breastfeeding.
That's new.
We've had a pregnancy swap, but I don't think we've had a swap while the person was breastfeeding.
Yeah, I thought that was interesting.
And okay, that's the guy a new one. And Mama Boy didn't breastfeed.
No.
Correct.
But definitely the period thing is something we've seen over and over again. I think this is a lot more tasteful than a lot of the other period swaps we've had. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, one that I can think back on, Sex Trip? Is that the name of it?
With his, like, blood all over the walls.
Yeah, like, it literally is, like,
a crime scene.
Blood everywhere. This is a lot more tasteful. I think this is the first time we've ever had someone who is inserting a tampon into their original body with their new body.
Right.
Like, yeah, that's something new, I guess. Yeah. I don't know. Can we praise this film for that? I don't know. Is that something to be praised?
It's not nothing.
let's get you to go over this incredibly competent and mediocre storyline, Paul, in 30 seconds. Okay.
I reckon you can do it, Paul. Can I coach you a little bit in this? Because I reckon you can do it. And I've been listening to these a lot. I reckon there are two things you can do that will get you in 30 seconds.
Act one.
Number one, don't start. You're going to hate me for saying this. Don't start with "so," which takes up about 3 seconds at the start of everyone. I'm like, that's 10% of your time gone. Number two, just don't start. Don't put so much emphasis on the start. Just get to the point real quick. Always the first act that holds you back.
Yeah.
That's my coaching.
Okay.
I want you to get there because I believe in you.
And then.
Yeah. These are all things that are very easy to say.
Sure.
In practice, when you're on the fucking spot.
I agree. I would attempt it too, except I've got COVID brain right now. I'm surprised I can even talk about it.
Yeah. Fair. All right. You ready? Someone count me in.
Well, now you've got all like our criticisms on your head. Why did Brendan say that? As well. So you got like two things. But this movie was simple. So
I want him to do it. I believe in him. That's the thing.
I just wanted to say something. All right, you ready? 3, 2, 1.
There's a married couple with two kids. They're arguing all the time. He's a scientist and he has a machine that can swap your thoughts. He forces his wife to use it, but actually swaps their brains. Then she has to become a scientist and he has to be in her body being a reporter. They fuck up each other's lives, realize the reason why they hated each other in their marriage by being in each other's shoes, and then they reconcile, and then they swap back and they live a happy life.
The end. Hey! Yes.
I knew it.
You were sort of lost at the end. You're like, oh, wait, I've done the movie.
I've got time.
They live happily ever after.
Have you considered being a professional coach?
Maybe I should.
Professional podcast coach.
If I'm good at one thing, Paul, I found over the last 6 years, I'm good at critiquing. So I can tell you what needs to be fixed. Well done.
I also heard one then and then.
So I know. I was very impressed with that. Yeah. Very good. Oh,
thank you. So, I guess something we always criticize bad body swap films for doing is not having an arc or for the characters and not having a reason for the body swap. Like, what are the characters learning by swapping? And I think that's something this film actually does pretty well. Like, it sets up this premise of this married couple that aren't listening to each other and have all these deep-seated resentments against each other, and they don't understand each other. And then by going into each other's bodies, they gain that understanding. Do you feel like this film did a good job in that respect?
I think the opening scene is quite strong for that reason. It's also, again, it does two things. It represents the strength of the film, which it's like from a competent screenwriting perspective, it's there, but it's also doing everything we've seen a million films doing before. So, like, the idea of a marriage counseling session is about as played out a scene as I can think of. But as far as I can tell, because it also wasn't in English, it was in Italian, I was trying to keep up with the dialogue via subtitles, but it felt like the performances were very strong. Like the clearly set up relationships, their dynamic, their perspectives on what was happening and why their marriage was falling apart. I thought by the end of that opening 5 minutes, I was like, you've summed up perfectly. I understand where they're at and hopefully what the trajectory of the film is going to be. And then the film does that. It's hard to argue it doesn't really. So, yeah, I think it has the arc that we're frustrated when it's not in films. Like, I was frustrated it wasn't in the Mario movie. Not that's a swap film, but go on.
Yeah, I'm happy to bitch about that movie with you as well.
But, excellent. Finally, someone.
The entire, human race has rejected me, so I don't have a husband or a wife, whereas you two do. So, having that perspective, did you find this film, like, relatable at all? Could you relate to the struggles of their relationship?
I guess so. It feels like it's very dramatic in that way that I feel like I'd be, like, saying something too personal if I was to actually say, yeah, these are the fights me and Katrina have
had. No is my answer, actually. It's like, I guess in the sense that these characters are a bit older. I think they're in their 40s. They've been married for 10 years. Steph and I are about to have our first kid. Due to be married this year. We're now being pushed that to next year because of that kid.
So yeah, how long have you lived together?
Places. Yeah, we've lived together for 5 or 6 years now.
Yeah, that's marriage.
It's kind of, well, in that sense, then the no is the answer. Like, it isn't relatable particularly, I think. But I just think that's because I'd like to think my relationship is healthier than these ones are. Maybe it's just we're not at that stage in our lives where we've had kids our professional lives are in the same sort of place that these are. But I think there's truth in what they're saying, especially this idea of like them both not listening to each other or being absorbed in their professional lives. And the others, the partner not doing a good job of like recognizing that to the point where they start to resent each other. That seems true to life and certainly something that I think we are all guilty of sometimes.
I think they did both were pretty shitty to each other. Like, especially, she's at this point in her career where she's gotten this giant promotion. And
he could give a shit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like, she's like literally like, I'm on TV today. And he's like, okay. Doesn't even want to watch it. Like,
I'm sorry, let's be fair. He's like fucking created a machine that can transfer brainwaves. Like, she's doing a talk show.
So, you think he's justified in ignoring
her? Oh, no, absolutely not. I'm just saying. If we're, like, talking about, like, what's going to wow this guy, I would just say his machine was a bit more impressive.
Maybe, yeah. maybe this is your future you're seeing into here, Brendan. That's what's going to happen to you based on the way you dismissed that.
I'm going
to
spill a cup of coffee on.
No, but to be honest, Katrina's the one that's going to be making the brainwave machine. You're the talk show host.
Yeah, maybe.
Yeah, I'm gonna have a talk show about feminist issues.
we have one. It's the show.
What is it?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
I was trying to figure out actually something I didn't understand, and maybe I was just not keeping up with it in the with the subtitles or whatnot, and having COVID,
I just couldn't read them that fast.
Yeah, they it was a fast talking film a lot of the time. It actually was hard to keep up at times, but the in terms of his funding or whatever, there was a whole thing about the divorce that mm-hmm. like she was going to take him to the cleaners or whatever, or that she'd spoken to a lawyer who said that, etc. And mm-hmm. like she was apparently the earner in this relationship, and he really wasn't, even though he was a brain surgeon.
Yeah,
or like, or I didn't quite understand, and maybe that, and that's true, yeah. that certain places in the world the wage for someone working in like medical professions you would think would be higher than they are. Like I know in the US, like it's not necessarily as lucrative a business as it might be if you're like working as a private surgeon or something like that in Australia. Mm-hmm. So that could be part of it too. I might not be as, it might be different there to here, but it did feel mm-hmm. like based on the sort of work he was doing, he should be able
yeah,
to
but
like,
still, right? Like,
yeah, brain, I thought it's, even with doctor. His research, like,
yeah,
it still felt like he should probably be able to contribute to the household income.
But then we find out that he was actually taking his money
and investing
funneling it into the brain swap.
Gotcha. Machine. Okay. So that was the yeah. thing. It was like she was bringing the money and he was putting into that stuff. Okay. Yeah. I thought it must have been that. It still felt like a little weird that he like she'd been propping up this household, this four person family, two kids, two adults, on her own yeah. as like, I don't know, behind the scenes person at a TV studio that does morning TV. I wasn't really sure what the go was there. It seemed a little uneven, but anyway, that was just me.
But there's this whole like subplot with at his work where this other like evil doctor's trying to like take yeah. his research and claiming it that it's his own, and like the like grumpy head of the hospital doesn't want to like acknowledge who's really done the research, mm-hmm. and it was all very like
unnecessary.
I don't know. Yeah. And didn't feel, I don't know, genuine in any way.
Yeah, because it's like overnight I'm going to teach you how to be able to be convincing that you know like
about neuroscience.
Like, neuroscience, yeah.
Yeah, I think if yeah. it's a comedy, it's like you need to put it in that basket because it's cartoony in a couple of places. Mm-hmm. Like Charlie's a little cartoony, even though they try to ground the idea of like how that machine works. The bit with the doctors stealing research from each other is cartoony. The mm-hmm.
You could legitimately like, well, I have the machine, so therefore yeah. I was the creator. Like... That's yeah. that's really unconvincing as
the stuff with the TV show, extremely cartoony, but like not outright comedy. It didn't feel like it mm-hmm. it was leaning in that direction hard enough. But you, because it's silly in that way, you have to like put in that basket. I think
you have this for. Like dramatic elements, and then like for some reason, as soon as he's on television, he becomes like the biggest bloke.
Yeah,
yeah. Or he's just like sick and tired of everything. He sits with his legs open and he's like...
Yeah, yeah, that's an element just for me. It's like not being aware of like your positioning your legs is one thing. It's another thing to like when you're on television, even if you were...
If I was wearing a skirt, I'd be aware of my balls hanging out. So why would I be aware of my vagina?
But can you imagine if yeah. this guy, if he still in his own body was on television, is that how he's going to sit? To talk to somebody. Is that how he
yeah,
sits?
Yeah, he wouldn't be all yeah. slumped over.
Yeah, 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 you know what I mean? Yeah. Like, that's yeah, not what still, you would do.
He's not a bogan. He's a yeah. neuroscientist. Yeah.
Exactly right. He is going... He's in a meeting, right? He's going to stand, you know, sit upright. He's going to be attentive to the person he's talking to. He's not going to be behaving that way, which is the bit that makes that whole... He needs to be a slob in real life, but he wasn't. I don't know. It was weird.
Yeah, I think that's what robs those scenes of comedy
yeah.
because if the character was making a genuine effort
yeah.
to fit in and was still failing, then that's funny. If the character is purposely not giving a fuck, that's not funny. Mm-hmm. Like,
absolutely. Comedy. So the best comedy is grounded in character, and when they're not actually the character at that point, they're just the stupid characters. Joke. It's not funny anymore. It's just silly and clowny.
And the fact that the TV station let those segments go on and on and on, no matter how much bullshit was happening in them,
and then had episode after episode where it's just like, this is a terrible show. All right, see you all tomorrow.
And then the implication that the ratings were going up, the worse the show was getting.
I thought they were saying purely because she had her legs open. That's why the ratings went up, right?
Oh, really?
I think that was part of it.
I'm not...
They were like, bold move, but it worked.
I'm not a straight man, obviously, but is that sexy? Like, no. A girl with, like, pantyhose spreading her legs? Like, is that a thing?
No, or? And this is why what you're saying is, like, if he was making a genuine effort but just kept doing these things that he wasn't aware of, like, just was too comfortable, his legs were open towards the camera, right? Mm-hmm. And it was enough to give a peek or whatever. It was embarrassing, but it wasn't like...
intentional.
As ridiculous as it was in the thing, then that would actually kind of track. But and it's so over the top that
And they
ludicrous.
Actually did pull off that joke in the opposite. When she's in his body, she's friendly to the babysitter.
Yes.
The babysitter then interprets that as flirting and is in love with him.
Yes, I quite like that. That was an interesting, like, a... he's aware of this. Like, that argument that they tried to come to some sort of compromise. The only babysitter you've liked out of 100 that we've thinged, I knew this, but we weren't going to get rid of her. So, I had to just try and, like, keep it cool. And then she does this one time, she's nice to her. She is nice to her. Yeah, I thought that was really actually quite interesting moment.
I was more like, you know, they had the whole, like, being terrible at a job on TV was, like, one thing. But then to literally, like... punch out a worker, like someone who worked on the show, and that they were returning to work every day after that. I'm like, wow.
It's different in Italy. They're impassioned people.
You can just punch people. Yeah. Which, once again, totally out of character of the neuroscientist that we saw, that he was just like, popping people on the streets.
So this is the second film where we've had someone swap into the body of a surgeon. So the first one was like Father Like Son, and this one. And both films have avoided the scene that we want, which is for the person to actually try to do surgery on someone.
And kill someone.
Yeah.
Fumble their way through brain surgery.
Yeah, that's comedy. That is comedy. And, like, it's just sitting right there, ready for you to do.
How do you feel about, like, there was so much time spent? They really tried to avoid going into work. I think it's ridiculous that she's like, no, this is my big opportunity. You have to go in and completely fuck this up. even though, because you're not capable of doing my job here. But then it's like, wear the bandage on your hand, say you've got dequavanes, like legitimate syndrome, it means you can't do surgery or whatever. I was like, that's correct. That's what you do.
Yeah.
You're sick and can't go to work. Yeah. Like every effort up until the point of forced to go in, I thought was quite good.
There's so many of these movies that we watch where they don't even try to not go. Like they're like, okay, well, we swapped, I guess let's go to work or let's go to school. And every time we're like, why? Why would you do this? This film puts a lot more effort into the mechanics of the swap, and they're trying to actively swap back the whole time. And we find out eventually that they technically haven't swapped. That because the machine that he was using was supposed to be like a mind-reading machine, as swapping your thoughts to someone else. And this just swapped all of their thoughts and memories to the other person and was kind of like overshadowing.
Copied the thoughts over rather than a swap of actual bodies. Yeah.
So they're really in their body somewhere. They've just been overlaid with everything from the other person. And the film's positing that what makes you is your memories and thoughts.
Yeah, so this was, like, the most interesting thing about the film, because I was like, oh, is this a swap? And then I was like, well, when I watch other films, what am I considering is happening? Is there a swapping of the soul? Is this what it is?
Yeah.
Like, is it a legitimate, like, removal of memories and put into someone else? Can a data transfer of memories be considered? So I found it much more interesting to think about the swap in this than anything else that the movie does.
I guess, like, if we go by the films that we've watched, it was the swap mystical or scientific?
Well, and it was still a cup of coffee, like, spilt on a machine.
Yeah.
That somehow made it do miraculous things. I think this is a little on the magic side. Weird science magic. How about that?
I think it is. I think you have to, at least by the rules that this is suggesting, that what makes you a person is your memories and experience, then they have swapped who's who. Like, all of us, it's interesting, right? Yeah. It's a swap of personalities. It's not a swap of minds. Does that make sense?
Like, yeah, it's like
they have become each other.
It's like if you were to go into, like, a teleporter. It's not like you come out the other side. It's just you get, like, melted and yeah. then your molecular structure is rebuilt on the other
How
side.
How do you feel like, about that with, like, Star Trek? Like,
yeah,
every time you get into one of those things, you die and they replace you with a copy of yourself.
Yeah, and from, like... Me sitting here, that's fine because I'm not going into it. And the people coming out are an exact replica. So it doesn't affect me any, but I'm not going in one.
Exactly right.
But that's what it was going on. But then that made me wonder, did they, like, because I was too tired. I, like, watched this at, like, I finished it at, like, 1 a.m. and I had to work at, be at work at 6. So I, like, really didn't have much time to steal it. But if they're in their bodies already and... the other person has learnt a lesson, mm-hmm. but that person isn't actually in that body. Did they actually learn their lessons? They learned them for them.
Theoretically, I guess, when they... that's the question. Are they just going to remove that top layer, or do they sort of put a layer back on top of layer? Are we adding a third layer when they do it at the end, and so they get those memories
like
back.
An update of the memories.
Correct, right? Because otherwise, you're right. You are only learning it in one direction.
But then they've got the exact memories, so they're actually like the same person now. Like, they're
which
not even
is the ending of the movie.
To become one.
They turn around, they say mum, and they both turn around.
Yeah.
The kid says mum, and they both turn around. Which... I actually hated that. I always hate that. It's like it's setting up for a sequel or you want to leave. It's a fucking Inception ending. Fuck that shit. I hate that.
Yeah.
It's like a Black Mirror ending, really.
Yeah. But if you think about it, it's kind of like the science of what happened is they kind of are each other at that point. Like they are.
And I think thematically as well, it says a lot.
Yes.
Like about them learning about each other, what makes each other tick, and they have a deep understanding for each other to mm-hmm. the point where they are each other at this point. So
it's not the worst. It's superficially, it looks like a terrible ending. I think ultimately it lines up with the themes pretty well.
It looks and feels and plays out like a safe film that's been, you know, budgeted by a film corporation, like a, and yeah. But it does have some interesting ideas.
Yeah.
All right. So you heard what we thought of the movie, but how attractive did we find the cast? Now it's time for Hot or Not. Take it away, Brod.
Are they a toot or a boot? Are they ugly or cute? Tell me if they're hot or not. Ding.
Ding.
Everyone is beautiful in their own way. Thanks for making me do that with COVID voice. I really appreciate
no
that.
No worries.
that's for the criticisms at the start, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, fair enough.
So let's start with Kasia Smutniak as, I'm sure I pronounced that wrong, as Sophia, the wife. The titular wife.
Is she really 45 in real life?
I highly doubt it.
She's a very attractive lady.
Yeah, she actually reminded me of Helena Bonham Carter mixed Ooh. With Monica Bellucci. If you put those Ooh, people in a blender.
That's an interesting mix.
Yeah. But yeah, she's quite stunning.
I agree. Yeah. Everyone that was telling her she was hot was right.
Unfortunately, they decided to put a scene in where he in her body gives himself a haircut And that wig that she's in for the rest of the film is just horrible.
Sure.
Horrible.
And that's then, not her fault, then, though.
And then, like, you know, they give that character a sassy, like, makeup and hair artist that she works with at the work. And he's supposed to give her a makeover. And that also looked terrible.
Yeah, can terrible. We rate, like, each section of the movie? So, like, her at the start, her, like, with Andrea in the body getting done up like a call girl. And then then her looking like a Korean, like, dance pop sensation. All three hot, by the way.
Yeah, no, no, but yeah. Still absolutely would.
Yeah, even in the week, I thought it was great.
It speaks a lot to her hotness
yeah.
that she was able to still retain it with that terrible wig on her head.
100%.
By the way, she is 44.
Now.
When was the movie made, though?
2017, so...
Yeah, so she was...
Almost.
No, she was 38.
That's almost 40.
Yeah, but she's 45 I'm in this 38. Movie, isn't she?
Are you calling me almost 40?
Oh, you're so close, mate. You might as well be.
I don't like this.
I thought I was turning. I thought I was turning 38 this year, but I realized it's next year. And it was real, like, pick me up.
Pier Francesco Favino as Andrea, the husband.
I'm really interested in Paul's opinion on this one.
It seems very attractive man to me.
He looks like a gremlin to me, but...
Really?
I'm looking at this guy's grin, and he's just creeping the fuck out of me.
He has a giant following. People worship the ground this guy walks on. I know a lot of women find him extremely sexy. I didn't see it. Didn't see it. And
really?
It's not like his character was overly charismatic to make up for it. So I think
and he was really smart. You wouldn't have dug that at all.
How am I the only guy?
No.
How am I the only one of the three of us giving him a hot? How did we end up here?
Know. Yeah, strange. You know,
I've seen him in things, right? This guy must be.
Yeah, yeah, he's had famous. A Hollywood career and everything. Yeah. So he's talented. Like, I thought he did a good job in the role.
Yeah.
Not arguing
that. Whatever your name is, if you're listening, like, don't worry, you're famous. So, our opinion.
Yeah.
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 You might have seen this a million times, but one of my favorite bits that he did, it's not necessarily him, it's probably direction, but when she's entered his body for the first time and she's throwing up. And pulling the hair back.
Yeah,
to do the
I
was like,
that.
That was very, like, yeah. just like muscle memory. That's what you do. I really like that little detail. That was great.
Yeah.
Yeah. And we haven't seen that before. So
really? Well wow.
Yeah. Paola Calari as Angelica, the babysitter.
How old is she?
She looked, mid 20s, right?
I want to say mid 20s. I'm a little worried she was meant to be like 16
she's
or something.
A babysitter. It's just
yeah,
like,
yeah.
That's the job of a 13 year old kid for like
it's
popsicle,
possible.
Right?
It's possible.
Yeah, I was going to say, like, if she was that young, they wouldn't have let her kiss him. But then I was like, oh, it's Italy, maybe. It's
exactly.
Maybe would have, yeah.
Exactly. She's definitely attractive.
She's 32 she's attractive. Now. So
okay.
Yeah.
She's. Yeah,
yeah,
she's
in her mid-20s.
Yeah, she's hot.
Yeah. what did we think of her, like, so willingly, like, breaking up this marriage?
Oh, that's what you do.
Was that hot?
It didn't have to be. It didn't have to break up the marriage. It was meant to be a dirty little secret.
So, okay, so you're in favor of...
Not to break it up, just to, like, have something in the back of his head for the rest of his life.
If you ever hire a nanny, I'm going to be looking very closely.
It's real shame this is recorded.
And let's finish off with Gabrielle Falsetta as the makeup artist at her work, because I thought he was hot and I just wanted to mention that.
Wait, and the makeup artist, really?
Yeah, no, that's really surprised that's where you jumped to.
Yeah.
Yeah, and like...
I'm looking at a picture of him. It looks like he's in prison. This is
he's
the face of a man who's done crimes.
Look, I've just seen it.
Are you looking at the IMDb?
His IMDb picture is a train wreck.
Look at the IMDb picture. Paul's like, this man is the gorgeous, beautiful, sexy dude. I don't think you're right.
In the film, he looked good. I think when he was making this IMDb picture, he was like, I want villain roles, make me sweaty, make me look dirty. Yeah, it's not the best picture. But, you know, I thought, you know, maybe I just, you know, he was gay, which means I could probably
he was achievable is what you're saying.
Achievable in some way.
Judging by this profile picture, he's still achievable.
All right. So, Gabrielle, hit me up.
I know I'm the master of doing this, of like doing things in the wrong part of the show, but yeah. Just because I don't know how else we'll do it. What did you think of the sex scene in this?
Oh, yeah. We didn't talk about that at all.
No. Oh, yeah.
That's like our MO.
It's. I was like, Hot or Not seems like the last chance to talk about, so I thought I'd bring it up now.
Dick fart and sex jokes, right?
Yeah. You know, this isn't the first film we've had where people have swapped genders and then fucked themselves.
Mm-hmm. Call that to
this film.
Boy girl.
Sorry?
Is it boy girl thing, our first episode?
No, they didn't ever fuck as each other. Dating the Enemy, they did.
Dating the Enemy.
That French movie that the Dissociates.
Of course, the French movie did.
Yeah, you watched that.
Oh,
as well,
the Nobodies.
The Nobodies, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
They fucked each other in their original days, didn't they? Or
I feel like they did. So maybe. But that's,
yeah, they
I think
definitely
if,
did.
If I'm
yeah.
comparing it to that, that's why I thought this film was quite interesting, because I think they handled it like in a realistic way. I think the hesitation of like kind of want to, but if I'm straight, then this is weird that I'm kissing a dude even though it's me, right? Like that made sense. Then the idea of like, fuck it, let's just try it because why not?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like this is the people, this if you never get this opportunity again, it'd be interesting to try it. Turn the lights off, really fumble your way through it. In the dark, laughing sort of about it, but also, I don't know, I actually was quite impressed with how it was handled. I thought it was quite good. It seemed as realistic as it could be.
The film also implied that female orgasm was better than male.
It's not the first.
I don't know, like, do you think there would be that much hesitation? Because it's essentially
I was thinking it as it was doing it. It's not jerking off. Maybe it is. Maybe it feels that way to you as a gay man, though.
Wouldn't you be curious?
Paul does it in the mirror.
Because think about this way, Paul. Yeah, that's the thing. Exactly it. It's like, I'm not looking or thinking about me. Fucking me. If I'm
it's
jerking
such a
off.
Boy conversation.
You know what I mean? Yeah. Maybe you do, Paul. And that's fine.
Is it fine?
Not here
yeah,
to judge.
I guess so. Yeah. Well, you know, I don't know where I'm even going to go with this. Let's just end there. Let's get to Opinion Swap, where we find some entertaining reviews of wife and husband from across the interwebs. So the first one's from Tiago Cardoso, who gives it 4 stars, and he says, there's nothing like walking a mile in your spouse's heels or wielding a scalpel in an operating room to appreciate his or her challenges and talents.
What was their rating? Sorry for that one.
4 stars.
Okay. Sure. It was that the person writing the tagline. Like, that could have been the tagline for the movie.
Also, it was very hard finding, like, English reviews for this film. Most of them were Italian.
I was super impressed that as a neuroscientist, brain surgeon, he was also able to like code as well. Like,
yeah,
he really
man
a jack
of many
trades.
Talents. Mm-hmm. Yeah. This one's from Marty, who gives it 3 stars, and they say, "Me, wait, was this all a trans allegory? And now they're both living together happily ever after as non-binary parents. Also, me." Always was.
I don't get the end of that.
Pardon, you've lost me.
But they're always correct. It wasn't a trans allegory.
Yeah. I get what they're going for. I don't quite get
that would
the
be
format
to say that
of
every single
review.
Swap well, film is a trans allegory.
We've talked about this, though. We've wanted I've been surprised there hasn't been more trans allegories in swap films. We'd like to see it. Mm. I don't think this was it, though. Because like you said, Brendan, yeah, you could argue that just about any gender like, swap film no, at like, that point.
Issue of dysphoria in this. Did I say the right one?
Yeah.
Yep.
Cool.
Yeah, like, I think they're saying, like, that ending where they both answer to mum.
Sure.
Kind of, yeah. I don't know.
To me, the implication there was that Andrea is dead. And that... what's
the wife's name? And Andrea are dead. And they're just... So Drea.
I think it was like, just Sophie.
Together.
I think it was two Sophies. Yeah. It was sort
two
of...
Two Sophies, you reckon?
Well, no, I don't think that. But that's like the implication. If I think if you're going to try and interpret what was said, I don't know. It seemed more likely it was two Sophies somehow and Andrea was dead than like... I don't know. The trans allegory, I don't quite see. I want it to be there. I honestly do. I think a film should do it. I just don't think this was... I don't think it's really there for this one. No. Certainly not in a 5-second clip at the end.
This was from Stephen Andrew Martin.
I was
going to
say, Julia Louise Stegwalter, if you're listening, let us know if that's what you meant when you wrote this.
Is that the name of the writer? Julia Louise Stegwalter?
Well, there's a few. Carmen Roberta Danza and Danny Ilguru?
Keep trying. You'll get there eventually.
So this one's from Stephen Andrew Martin, who gives it 4 stars. Oh, and wow. He says, charming, funny, smart, best body swap movie since Freaky Friday.
Oof.
Ooh, big shoes, that's big shoes.
Big
and which
claim.
One did they mean? Did they mean the musical? Did they mean the 1970s?
Yeah, the Jodie Foster. Did they mean the TV movie with Shelley Long? Like, you got to be
which
more
we
specific.
Still need
here.
To get a hold of.
This one, I wanted to do at least one of the Italian reviews. Yep. So here we go. So this one
time
is,
to crack
is
out
from,
your racist accents.
Yeah, yeah. Mamma mia. Oh, yeah. God. So this one's from
Chris Pratt. Just go from Brooklyn.
Yeah. This one's from Lucioni, who gives it 1.5 stars. And he says, stupidissimo. Tipo commedia media americana.
What's that translate to?
Yeah.
This film's stupid. It's just like an American comedy.
Yeah. You know what? Fair. Yeah. I think that's an apt criticism.
And finally, Freddie 8599 gives a very confusing review.
Okay.
Because he says, I never had such a good laugh. 3.5 stars. Imagine laughing the most you ever have in your entire life.
And it's worth 3.5 stars.
And it's half 3.5 fucking stars. Also, what in this film would make you laugh more than you ever have in your entire life?
I'm not sure.
The crumbling of their marriage?
It's like Schadenfreude, like, oh, this is getting me where I'm going.
Hey, do you know the lead actress in Under the Tuscan Sun?
Diane Lane?
No, Julia Louise Stegwalter. I just looked at a picture of her. She's like an American actress known for An Almost Ordinary Summer.
Because she wrote... Oh, no. Did she?
I've seen her face. She's like a...
No, like the picture that you're looking at is Diane Lane.
This was a real body swap. It was based on a real story.
No, the picture that you're looking at is Diane Lane.
This was a real body swap. It was based on a real story.
Let's get to tenuous recommendations, where we each recommend a piece of media that is linked to today's movie in some way. And a reminder, if you ever want to see a list of all the recommendations we have made on the show, head over to our Letterboxd page, which is linked on our website. So I'll get us started. My connection is Pier Francesco Favino, who played the main character in this film, Andrea. And he was in a 2013 movie called Rush. Have either of you guys seen Rush?
Rush Hour, I've seen. It's the one you're talking about? No? Okay.
So this...
Two?
No. So this is a movie directed by Ron Howard.
Is this the car movie?
Yeah, so it's directed by Ron Howard. It's written by Peter Morgan, who created and wrote most of The Crown. And it stars Chris Hemsworth, Daniel Brühl, and Olivia Wilde.
I have heard good things.
And this film is fucking great. I'm not a car person. I'm not a Formula One person. I know everyone under the sun has watched the Netflix Drive to Survive documentary and has become obsessed with Formula One racing. I am not one of those people, but I thoroughly enjoyed this film. A period piece about a real life rivalry between two Formula One drivers, James Hunt and Niki Lauda. I think one's for Ferrari, one's for some other car brand that I don't care about. But the film makes you care about it and is really well directed. I think Ron Howard can make some very bland, generic movies, but this is one of his like more impactful films, I'd have to say. It has a lot of personality to it. Humor, sex appeal. Like Chris Hemsworth is like peak hot in this film.
I mean, he was just coming off probably the start of the Thor franchise, pretty much, right?
Like, yeah, this is...
maybe just after Avengers, actually. I think about...
2013?
2012 was the Avengers, I'm pretty sure.
Oh, was it? Yeah.
Yeah.
I feel like he's not as cloud-like as he is normally. He's a bit more, like, human-looking in this film.
Okay.
And I appreciate that.
Cloud-like?
Yeah, you know when people like become so muscly, they just look like a pile of clouds.
The way you draw clouds, just like the half circles all the way around. That's just him, all bulges.
Yes.
Made of balloons or something. Righto.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, like okay. He's got that, like the Rock's got that cloud look.
Sure.
Whereas he's like kind of like more lean and more my speed.
Back in the Cabin in the Woods day when he was still right.
Definitely. So, yeah, and like Olivia Wilde is great in this as well. Natalie Dormer from Game of Thrones plays a small role. So, yeah, if you haven't watched it, and especially if you're one of these people that has really got into like F1 in the last couple of years and you still haven't watched this film, I'd say give it a go.
It's a sports movie, Paul. I know I'll like it because it's a sports film. They're always good.
What's yours, Brad?
Well, this was a confusing movie because it kind of had... Well, it's kind of got three titles. It's got the original Italian title. And then you told me it was called Wife and Husband. And then I went looking for it. And one other thing is telling me it was called Husband and Wife. It's hard to know what this movie's called. So I thought I'd go for another film that's got more than one title. So that's my tenuous connection.
Yeah.
So my recommendation is Edge of Tomorrow that was rebranded Live, Die, Repeat. The Tom Cruise and Emily Blunt sci-fi action film that's fucking great. Like, didn't do well at the cinema at all, possibly because Edge of Tomorrow is a terrible title for the film. What's the original manga called as well? It's like, it's got a weird title as well. Anything But Kill or something like that, I think it's called. Anyway, and it's got... the conceit is, and it's worth saying it just for the sake of like making sure you see the movie, it's kind of like Groundhog Day, but it's also an alien sci-fi action film. And it's one of the best action screenplays I'd seen in years up to that point. I watched it on a plane because I'd heard it was good, but it was never like missed at the cinemas and whatnot, as everyone else did. And it's just one of the best. It's such a great film from start to finish. Tom Cruise, say what you want about him, the guy can make a fucking movie, and he's great in this one. Emily Blunt's fantastic. Live, Die, Repeat. I think they're making a sequel now, actually, somehow, which is weird, but I want it to happen.
Yeah, I watched that in cinemas, and it was a great time. But I haven't... I don't think I've seen it since, but I really enjoyed it.
I don't know if I've revisited it either, but I should, because it was so solid, so good.
Yeah, and I think in the intervening years, like the Groundhog Day repeating thing has become like we've seen it a lot lately. So
if they're making another one, happens in movies now. It happens in games. Like it's like TV a proper shows. Genre. If you want to do a sequel podcast to Swapcast, do the repeat Groundhog cast Day, yeah. or something like that. Like yeah, you could totally find it. It's great. I think there's. It's one of those genres that's surprisingly high number of quality movies, if that makes sense. Like,
yeah.
It's a conceit that really works somehow. I think it's possibly because if you think about arcs and, like, growth, it's a really easy way to express and show getting better. Like, here's the same situation done differently as you sort of level up. Like, sort of something that Edge of Tomorrow is very much like a video game as well. And so, because of that, I think it kind of works more often than it doesn't. It's interesting.
Hmm. Brendan, what's yours?
I am going to also do a tenuous link that's Groundhog Day related.
The link so wasn't because it's a Groundhog Day genre film.
Yeah, I know, but because what was your link?
My link was that the title has changed. It's got different titles. Husband and Wife or Wife and Husband, and I guess the Italian one as well. And so it was Live, Die, Repeat, but it was Edge of Tomorrow to begin with.
Yeah, and so I'm like bouncing off of that and I'm doing another... That's my tenuous link as well.
You're tenuously linked to my link.
And then linking to mine, which is Palm Springs, which is a Groundhog Day film.
This is not how you're supposed to do it, Brendan.
Is it ever how it's meant to be with Brendan, though?
But, like, you could all agree, it's a great film, right?
It's a good film. Yeah.
Have you said what it is yet?
You said, yeah.
Yeah, Palm Springs it's a Groundhog Day comedy sci-fi time travel vehicle.
I was literally going to mention it when I was talking about Groundhog Day style films.
Yes, surprised I didn't. And so that's why I'm mentioning it now, because it would be a crime to not watch this film if you enjoy that genre. And in general, if you enjoy comedies, like it stars Andy Samberg, it's got J.K. Simmons and that girl from How I Met Your Mother.
Spoilers.
I prefer her to think of her as the girl from... Oh, fuck. What was the other show she was in?
The chip in her head. I don't know.
The chip
made
in
for
your
love,
head.
Made for Love.
TV series. Yeah.
Yeah. Made for Love.
And it also has like a brief cameo from Jenna Freeman, who's like a very funny comedian that I like. So all these things it has going for it. Plus, it's a good comedy that's a lot of fun. And I'm not connected to
Wife and Husband anyway.
Well, that's not a connection. I think we can make a better connection. Can you think of a better one, Rod? Okay, here. I've got one. How about sci-fi romantic comedy? They've both got that going for it.
Yeah, it's the same genre. That's true.
How about the fact I watched them both on a streaming service? Is that enough?
How about the fact that they're both movies? Jesus Christ.
You did call it tenuous.
If you head over to our website, you'll see that each of us has ranked every Body Swap film we've reviewed on the podcast. So my question is, where are we all going to put Wife and Husband on our lists? Brod, you've actually got a pretty decent list.
My list is up there now. I've got a list of 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16 films on my list now. We're getting there.
I feel like we need to start like publishing yours.
Pardon? No. I shouldn't say films either, because I think there's like 5 TV show episodes on here as well. But like, you get the idea. But the list is growing. I do, yeah. It is its own notes document on my phone now that I have to keep referring to. I'm going to put this, and I think this speaks kind of to exactly what we're saying about this movie being just like right in the middle, like fine. I'm going to put it pretty much in the middle of my list, which puts it 2 under the Community Body Swap episode, 1 under the Buffy Body Swap episode, 1 above the Nobodies, which was the French Body Swap film we reviewed not that long ago.
Yeah.
Which I think is a more interesting film, but is a less competent movie. Remember we talked about that, like our big issues were like it had these great ideas, but it didn't do a very good job of actually doing anything with those ideas. And so I mean, I do like Solid. I do like, again, I had problems with the Mario Brothers movie. I like it when you have a fucking arc, when you have like the basics, like you understand how story works. So I'm going to reward it by putting it just above the Nobodies, which means it's two above Avatar: The Way of Water, which is important to mention.
I have to say I much preferred this to, I much preferred the Nobodies to this.
Like, I think there's an argument to be made for that, that like it is a more entertaining movie. It's also a longer movie, I think, though. Or maybe it's, I can't remember if it's way shorter.
I think, Nobody's was shorter.
It was just like so much was packed into that movie.
Yeah.
So much.
I will always reward ambition over competence.
Sure.
So, I am going to put this in between the 2001 sexy sci-fi Exchange and the 2012 Pixar Brave. Because, I definitely enjoyed Exchange more with its, like, crazy, you know, softcore porn aesthetics and everything. But, this definitely felt more complete than Brave did. So,
100%.
Yeah.
Brave would be a really good movie if it could just, like, follow through with its themes and ideas the way that this film does.
Yeah.
I think.
I'm going to put it between, and just purely, I feel like, watching so many of these films has soured my enjoyment of any of these films. So it's unfortunate for wife and husband that I've seen it this late in the game. But I'm going to be putting it between... And I Thought Your Parents Were Weird. And Chances Are.
Yeah, that's a solid placement. And You Thought Your Parents Were Weird. It was a fucking painful film that you, for some reason, enjoyed more than the rest of us. So
it's a robot that's inhabited by that's haunted by a dead kid's father. It's great,
and somehow manages to still be boring.
Is that the like plot how? Of Jack Frost? But just like a
yeah, a I never made robot. That connection until now. Yeah,
but also
it's more magical.
Yeah, and the mum fucks the robot.
Yeah, they did.
Kelly Preston really didn't. Kelly Preston never fucks the snowman. So, missed opportunity. So, next episode, we are going to go all the way back to 1936.
Wow.
For a swap history lesson. One of the earliest swap instances in film.
Is it the earliest?
No.
Oh.
I'm impressed. I believe there was a version of Vice Versa that was in the 20s, I'd like to say.
Even older. Wow.
Yeah. So, and I have been trying to track that film.
My
down
letters
and I
to the archives. I know a film where I rate people by how hot they are. Can I have a copy?
You know what? Like, I am devoted to that franchise. I actually tracked down a copy of the original, like, 1800s book, Vice Versa, and read it.
Wow.
Like, yeah.
Are you going to do a swap cast book club and do like body swap book reviews?
I hardly like anyone. Cool idea. How can I read a book?
Yeah. That sounds actually fucking painful.
and you what you're saying, this isn't.
This is, but it's less time consuming.
Okay, fair enough.
We're going to be doing the 1936 film starring Boris Karloff, The Man Who Changed His Mind.
Ooh,
where
clever title. I already like it.
It is. Where Dr. Lorient, a brilliant but unstable scientist experimenting with transferring minds, becomes vengeful when his magnate patron withdraws his support. So, I think it's going to be an interesting one.
That actually sounds like a good movie to watch.
I was going to say, it's going to be interesting, like, from a film language perspective, I think. Like, how as you, cause just for you guys who have seen so many swap films, to be able to go back and like say, oh, this is the origin of like some of the film language that we've seen so many of these films use. It's become a trope or an idea. This might be the origins of it. The first time you ever see someone look in their pants and go, oh, I've got a vagina or something like that, you know, like.
Yeah. Yeah. This is the first time somebody has changed their bodies and then inserted a tampon into their original body.
This is the first one. This is the one.
And it's too many swap buddies. So it's even more interesting.
Yeah, and tampons weren't even invented yet.
This film invented not only the swap genre, but tampons. What a fucking remarkable movie.
It's just a piece of history that we're covering here. And there's one detail of this film that will fucking make you jizz your pants, Brendan. It goes for 1 hour.
Oh, wow.
You only have to spend 1 hour of your life watching this film. Did you just cream yourself? Yeah, you did.
There's a bit of a build-up.
All right. So, yeah, I'm excited about that. Before we go, we have to do a new segment to the show. By Brendan's request... Brod's just finished the final ever episode of the Hunting Seasons podcast, which he did for 6 years.
We did.
And to commemorate that, Brendan would like to introduce a new segment to our show called Let's Berate Brod for the shows he hasn't reviewed on his show.
Are you co-hosting this with Stephanie or...?
This is definitely bring it back for another episode. I gotta be there. It's my segment, right?
I'll leave the floor to Brendan. Time to berate Brod.
First, can I say congratulations?
Thank you. I appreciate that, Brendan. So nice of you.
But let me just say, it's criminal and a detriment to your podcast.
The legacy we leave behind.
It is like smeared because, first of all, how do you not do Dispatches from Elsewhere? It's an amazing show. How did you miss that one? You didn't do Severance once again. How do you do a show about...
We tried. I wanted to do Severance.
The other two?
The reply. Severance... It was a show I wanted to do, and I want to say right now, mini review right here, fantastic, one of the best first seasons of a sci-fi show I've watched in years, 5 out of 5, can't wait for season 2. That's great,
but here and now, will you apologize?
Paul and I, and Liam, my brother, actually did discuss Severance on the podcast, just wasn't a review. We did our best. When you're making a show where you're watching a season of television and reviewing it each and every episode... Up to 50 reviews in one season, would you believe? The first season, when we still had time. You struggle to find chance to review all of them and convince your co-host to watch another fucking season of television. So it slipped under the radar, I admit, but doesn't mean we didn't talk about it.
I think you guys missed out on some really good shows. And
We acknowledge that. We even have a bit in our finale talking about the shows we didn't get to review.
Accommodating of my wrath.
Yes. What I'm hearing, Brendan.
What I'm hearing, Brendan, is that you need to start your own review, TV show review podcast, and then you can discuss those shows.
I've tried transitioning this thing, and this ship is well and truly sailed.
There's a lot.
I'd be interested to see Brendan's TV review show, like to see a review show from the perspective of someone that can never remember anyone's name, details of anything. What does that person have to think about TV shows?
That's how it would go.
Inspiring.
All right.
Anything else? Any other shows we should have missed? Yeah, there's got to be more than two.
No, I said the other two as well.
What were the other ones?
The other two.
Oh, the other
show.
Two. Oh, sorry. Actually,
this is
another
like
show
that
we
fucking. This is like that bloody interview where on Fox News where the guy was talking about
was
you
first?
And the.
We actually did discuss the other two, or. Damask, and I think Paul talked about it. I never saw it, but it definitely got discussed again.
And on a side note, it's coming back to Australian streaming May 4th, everybody, since you've subscribed to Binge to watch Husband and Wife, you've got it. So you can watch the other two streaming from May 4th, season 1 and 2 in full, and then season 3 weekly from there. It's one of the best shows on TV, and it's hilarious. 20-minute episodes.
Which one do you think they should watch first?
And Succession.
Wife and Husband,
Barry.
Or the other two?
And Taskmaster.
I think... I would put maybe Succession above.
Succession.
Actually, I would put other two and then Succession and then Husband and Wife or Wife.
Succession
and
is having an incredible and then season.
Barry, you can have Succession. A big old miss. you can put that at the bottom of the pile.
What?
I mean, this is why you
don't have a TV review podcast.
I have to kind of agree with Brendan. I gave up on Barry. Oh my God. Like the other two, like Succession is amazing. Like it is so good on every level.
I'm so sad there's only four episodes left.
Yeah. But the pure enjoyment I get out of other two and the rewatchability of other two, like I can just rewatch those episodes over and over again.
Yeah.
Like it has to be the top for me. But is that it? Do you need a break, Brod, anymore?
I'll save it for the next time he's on.
Okay.
Make a list.
On that though, Brod, I really have to say to our listeners, they should discover the Hunting Seasons podcast even now it's over. It's still well worth rediscovering. There's six years of amazing episodes, some with me on them. A lot without me, a lot with you on it, actually. Yeah. I managed to weasel my way in.
Quite a shout out, actually. You got mentioned multiple times in the finales, not just by us, but by listeners as well.
Yeah, which was lovely to hear. But you have a really great last episode where you kind of sum up your experiences and the bit where Damas was kind of like summing up your friendship, that's what got me in the feels.
So yeah,
I don't
too.
Know. If that was me, this is never going to happen. But just say if this was me an hour last episode.
I might write something and then, lovely and say it about you.
Yeah, I don't know. But if that happened, I would be a mess. But it's not going to happen. But I'm surprised that you weren't a mess. When she was saying that, like
I was a mess. I didn't have a fucking clue what to say at the time. I'm not usually one lost for words, and I was like completely lost. I put a lot of prep into that episode, and I did not prepare for that. That was came out of nowhere. It's very, very, very nice.
Imagine if like it didn't record, and you were like, "Could you just do it all again?"
That would have been just having to fake it like you're doing it for the first time. Yeah. That would have been hilarious, Brendan. Would have been so funny.
I was thinking, imagine if you, instead of like a heartfelt response to her, like decide to roast the shit out of her and do this really.
Yeah, you just have this paper you
and
crumple
you,
up.
And you go
it.
First. You go first, and then she does that.
Similar to what I did at the start of this podcast with you, it's like, actually, before we go, Damas, just had a couple of things I wanted to critique. Some suggestions for how you can do this better next time we make a podcast. Get rid of that lisp. That lisp is not helping.
Yeah.
Thank you, Paul. I say all those things. I wouldn't recommend starting with the last episode, though, if you are going to listen. It's very self-indulgent and really something to listen to once you're a fan already. But I am proud of that. Though, 200 review episodes, 40-odd bonus episodes, including off-topic hot topics. A lot of them were with Paul discussing heaps of TV news and TV shows been watching that we didn't review. There's lots there. Just huntingseasonspodcast.com or... from there, actually, from the website, there's a sortable like document you can go to. Look at the shows we've reviewed. You can put them in alphabetical order. You can, based on review, you can find the episodes that Paul's in based on the notes section. So you can start with one of those or just put a TV show title plus Hunting Seasons in Google bar search bar and you'll probably find something.
So until next time, don't be a piece of shit on the ground, DPW. And review us on iTunes or Spotify, And I was Paul Mitzi.
I was Brendan Levi. Sorry, I could hear Tommy crying, and I just
thought you were mugging that. I can't believe it.
Brian, your turn.
I was Broderick Gordis.
Thanks for listening. Bye.
Bye.
The Swapcast podcast is recorded in Adelaide, Australia. It's hosted by Paul Mitzi and edited by Brendan Levi and Paul Mitzi. Our theme song was written and performed by John Marco of Too Creative, featuring Lucy Thomas, and recorded at Browntown Studios. Our music bumpers were created by Reggie Parker. Contact him on parkerregmusic@gmail.com. Thanks for listening.